It's a pleasure to be here. It's not a pleasure to hold this microphone, but I love Pritzker Medical School. What can I say? But first, let me tell you about what I do when I am in my lab, which is to look at whether there is a biological basis for empathy. Now, when I got into this game, I had sort of an assumption that I think a lot of people have, which is that empathy is a very cortical event, and we fancy humans are very special because we can put ourselves in other people's shoes, and it is that that motivates us to be nice to other people. And I had a graduate student, Inbal Ben-Ami Bartal, who was actually working in the psychology department with my colleague Jean Decidi. And they approached me about, let's see whether this assumption is correct. Maybe empathy is, in fact, a biological process. And the way that we ask that question is we say, well, animals don't have cognition. They're not doing math problems. They're not building businesses or composing symphonies. They are biological creatures, and they do what their biology dictates. So let's ask the question of whether a rodent can show empathy. Now, there had been some suggestions that rodents do show empathy, and the work that predated our work basically showed that if one mouse was expressing pain behavior, was showing that they hurt, that another mouse seeing that would show even more pain behavior. Okay? And this is basically a version of one baby cries, all the baby cries. All right? So emotional contagion. And emotional contagion is interesting, and that's a fascinating and marvelous finding, and yet it's an internal experience. It doesn't actually do anyone else any good. All right, so what we wanted to do was to try and use empathy as a motivation for an individual rat to actually do something. And the something that we wanted them to do was to help. So what we did was we devised this. This is a restrainer. This is what we call a restrainer. It's a little bit of a hyperbole because, in fact, the rat that is inside this a plexiglass tube can actually turn around. So they're not particularly restrained. This is not a huge stressor. The rat inside would rather not be inside, but the rat inside is not freaked out. Okay? And I think actually that is one of the reasons this paradigm works. So these guys are cage mates, and one of them is put into the restrainer, and the other one's put on the outside. Okay. And they're in this arena, which is about yay big, and we put the restrainer in the middle of the arena. Now, in rat mind, middle of arena, very, very scary place. So it takes a lot of guts, a lot of de-stressing for the rat to move from the periphery, where they like to be, into the middle. And we did this for 60 minutes for 12 days. And what we saw was that eventually the rat, almost immediately, the rat headed for the restrainer. So it got over that distress at leaving the periphery of the arena and went in there and really tried to figure out what the heck is going on here. It's just like climbing on the restrainer, biting at the restrainer. There was a lot of tactile interaction between the trapped rat and the free rat. In the end, there's a door here, and this door is fashioned such that it can only be opened from the outside. So the only one that can get the trapped rat out is the free rat. And on average, by day 6, the free rat does exactly that. Goes in, opens the door, and out comes the trapped rat. Now, let me say a couple things about that. First of all, the first time the free rat opens the door has no clue what he's doing. No clue. Why? Because he's not an engineer. He can't look at this and say, oh. That's a good counterweight. I'm going for the other side. So, in fact, what he does is he just spends so much time there. He cares so much. He is distressed. That this guy is distressed. And so he accidentally opens it. Well, the next day, he comes into the same situation, but now he knows, the business end is over by this door thing. So now he goes here, spends his energy there. Instead of opening it after 40 minutes, he opens it after 20 minutes. By day 12, what the rat does is he comes in, he races around, same gig as yesterday, goes directly over the door, opens it within a minute. So that is one thing. The other thing I should mention about what this looks like is when the trapped rat gets out and he actually, what he does is he races around the arena because he hasn't really been able to explore this arena. He's been trapped in the plexiglass tube. Well, the free rat, it's actually fascinating to watch. The free rat races after the trapped rat. It's like, I'm really excited that you're free. I'm really excited that you're free. And he races around him, jumps on him, licks him. And it looks like the celebration. We didn't put that into our paper, but we call it, in the lab, we call it the celebration. And so that suggested to us that while we were sure that what we had was a well-motivated pro-social behavior, well-motivated helping. But what we weren't sure was that it was motivated by empathy. And the biggest other possibility was that it was motivated because the free rat wants to play with the trap rat. And that was very, you know, that became very possible once we saw this celebration. So what we did is we put two arenas together, and there was a division between the arenas, and the restrainer, instead of being in the middle of one arena, it was up against that division. So when the free rat opened the door, the trapped rat was released into a separate arena. We did this experiment for a very long time, and my students were very unhappy. But we did it for 3 months. And we did it in counterbalanced order. When the restrainer was empty, the rat stopped opening the door. When the restrainer had a trapped rat, he opened the door. Even though he's doing this day after day for a month, and he realizes after a few days at least that he's never going to get to play with this guy. So that suggested to us that at the very least, a social reward is not required for this helping behavior. And are there other possibilities? There are other possibilities. One of the other possibilities, which I think is that we've solved, is the what I call the Mount Everest possibility, meaning they open the restrainer because the restrainer is there. That appears not to be true because if the restrainer is either empty or it contains a toy rat from IKEA, and that could be the problem, they don't open. and one other possibility that people have raised is that this rat, the free rat, opens the door because the trapped rat is screaming so loudly and they just want to shut him up. This is sort of an aversion hypothesis. And we now have evidence that, in fact, evidence originally that there are very, very few alarm calls. And now we have evidence that in most of the situations where the animal does open, there are no alarm calls. So that looks like it's not the case. So why the heck would rats do this? I think that the reason is, I'm not the originator of this idea, this is a common idea across the field, is that mammals are altricial. That means the babies are born helpless. This is one of our rats. This is one of our litters. We enjoyed them very much. And these rats, if this mom does not take care of these pups, they die. So mom has to be very sensitive to the pups' needs, has to know when they're cold, when they're hungry, and when they're in danger of predation. And she has to be able to respond. And so the thought is that, in fact, this process of empathic-driven helping behavior has been generalized from the mom's parental care of the pups. I want to say just a couple more things, and then I'll entertain your questions. One is that there are a lot of people that participate in this research, and including medical school students. So this is Tess Murray, and she did an experiment which showed that the free rat actually has to feel distressed. When Tess gave the free rat essentially a chill pill, okay, the free rat no longer cared. So there has to be a degree of catching the other individual's distress. And she did, Tess is a third year medical student. She did this part of scholarship and discovery. She'll be back in her fourth year to do another experiment. We haven't figured out which one she'll do, but she will. She's a member of my laboratory, I'm thrilled to have her. I'm thrilled to have other Pritzker students in my lab. And finally, let me just say that when I'm not in my lab, I do very much enjoy teaching Pritzker medical students. So I hope to see you in 17 months. And this is a picture of a very young student in the daughter of a second year medical student who is getting a head start. So thank you very much.